Welcome back to the Jason Rantz Show here in Dallas. This is a special bonus podcast-only content from Dallas, mostly because I'm sitting here and I am bored because I'm waiting for a guest. I have a TV hit, I have a radio hit, and I'm doing an interview, and I have some downtime in between. But it's not enough for me to go back to my hotel, because by the time I get there, I'm going to basically only have 10 minutes, and then I'll have to walk back. It's like 3.5 miles. It's not that far, but it feels far. I thought I would give you a little bit of behind-the-scenes look at CPAC. Lots of people here, incredibly diverse. I know a lot of folks want to pretend that the Republican Party is not diverse, but it very much is. And this conversation nationally about the, you know, the Latino vote or the Hispanic vote and where it's trending, I think it's based on the demographic here, I think it's trending towards the Republicans. Lots of great speakers, lots of cool booths, lots of people who inexplicably decide to walk up to me and talk to me while I'm actively talking into a microphone. I do not have a button that I can push that turns on an on-air light, but generally speaking, it feels like, and I could be crazy, but it feels like it would be common sense to not talk to someone while he or she is actively speaking into a microphone, in which you know is part of a radio show, since behind me there are two signs that indicate such. And I don't understand. I've learned now how to get aggressively rude when I need to, because there are sometimes, not the fans, there are plenty of fans here who are awesome. One just gave me a fist bump. There's some people who just trying to sell me something to put them on the air, like pitch me something. And I can't be any more obvious without getting rude to be just disinterested in anything that they're pitching. God bless them. I know it's a tough job, but I don't want to hear about your board game. Although that's oddly enough, that was, I see someone's now waving at me now. Hi, Jane. Someone came up to me with a board game, but I actually kind of like that one, so I shouldn't use that as an example. But there are a lot of people who are pitching me stuff that I'm just not interested in, and it has nothing to do with what we talk about. And they just, I am just like, yep, thank you. If we're interested, we'll let you know. And they just are still pitching. They do not stop. They just keep on pitching. And I don't know what to do unless I get just aggressively rude. So the other yesterday, I was walking back to the hotel room, and there were a couple of Fox reporters that I know. And so we were talking. All of us are kind of tired at that point. We've wrapped up our day. And someone comes up in the middle of our conversation and says, hey, I've got a breaking news story for you. He thinks Trump is going to become president at the end of the month. So it's a crazy person. And he's handing me stuff. And I'm like, especially because I was tired, I turn to him and I say, dude, I'm in the middle of a conversation. You can't just do that. And he gave me this look of he knew what he did was wrong. He absolutely knew what he did was wrong, except he continued. But you know, he knows what he did. But he just didn't. He just kept going. And then he left because I just was ignoring him. He came back today, earlier this morning, he came up to my booth, and he apologized profusely. So it seemed to have connected with him what he did, except he then followed up immediately with the same pitch for something that I clearly was not at all even morbidly curious about. So that's that. That's going behind the scenes of my life. It's just lots of selfies. The funny thing about selfies, not a single one of them comes off in a flattering way. It is impossible, the same way it's kind of impossible to do a Zoom call on TV and look semi-presentable, it is impossible to take a selfie with, and I think some of it is because of the height difference. I'm relatively tall. I'm certainly tall in the context of a lot of the people here who came up for photos. I'm 6'1", 6'2", if I stand up straight. Which I won't because I have bad posture. They're awful. You have to get the angle from high above. And there's a publicist here who I know and I'm friends with. And we took a selfie and then she looked at all of them and she goes, nope, we are never, never, never putting this out there. And so she deleted them. That's my spirit animal is someone who deletes stuff. I'm just rambling at this point, honestly, because I find myself hoping people don't stop and ask me for any more photos right now, because there's only so many crappy photos I can take. Yeah, that's all I got. Bye. Welcome back to the Jason Rants Show. We take a little bit of a break from all the political guests here at CPAC and bring you to South King County, where mayors are still saying their cities are just rife with crime. They've seen surges in all kinds of crime, speaking specifically about Auburn, Enumclaw, Kent, Black Diamond, so many more. And the mayors are coming together in the area, eight in total, saying we need help. We need help to cut down on all the crime, all the violence. However, according to King 5, one of the claims that were made by these mayors has already gotten some pushback from county leadership. Renton Mayor Armando Pavone said, "We really need to provide a higher level of public safety. Our community is demanding it." So four of the mayors in this group, they signed a public plea. They said the reason why they're coming together is because, frankly, there's just more power in numbers here. When you have just one city coming up, if it's just Tukwila alone, it's not going to be taken as seriously as it would if you get Tukwila plus seven others. When you throw in Auburn in there, and Nancy Backus, the mayor there, says nobody knows where one city begins and another ends. Nobody cares. They just want to feel safe. And ain't that the truth? Now, part of what they did was push back against a Senate bill that Democrats in Olympia passed, which stopped cities and counties from charging someone with drug possession in certain cases. There's another one that prevents the police officers from doing the vehicular pursuits. We've talked about that in a number on a number of stories. King 5 says it prevents police officers from conducting vehicle pursuits in certain circumstances. Okay, in most circumstances, almost all circumstances, it bans vehicular pursuits. But this is King 5's bias here. So they put this in a letter. Jim Farrell signed on as well. He's the mayor of Federal Way. He is running for King County prosecutor. We fully back him in this case. It is a no-brainer with who he's running against. But he called for some additional help because he's noticing the rise of crime directly tied to drug use. And he talks about in this letter the influx of meth and fentanyl that's coming into their communities. And it, of course, makes sense because they're not really allowed law enforcement to enforce the law when it comes to drug possession and even, for the most part, drug distribution. I know that they say that they charge, but the fact of the matter is when you've got so many drugs onto the streets, it's much more difficult to actually stop them. It really is, because you don't have enough support from a law enforcement perspective, and on top of that, you've just got so much of it coming in. It's really hard to get to the main distribution channels. A lot of it, of course, by the way, is coming from the border. Oh yeah, that thing that we're supposed to pretend is closed. But King County Executive Dow Constantine came out and said that there's a lot of hyperbole coming from the mayors. Dana Ralph said that the Justice Center in Kent, which, by the way, isn't taking in regular felony bookings because of the staffing shortages, said that officers are forced to take felony suspects to jail in Seattle. And King County, through Chase Gallagher, who is Dow Constantine's flack, called it hyperbole. He said, over the course of a single Sunday night in July, bookings were limited to only the highest priority cases so limited jail staff could prioritize safe operations in the jail. So we broke this story, by the way, that he just referenced there, that July day that they closed the jail for bookings. He is significantly downplaying the instances in which this occurred. Now, I'm not going to pretend that it happens every single day. It doesn't. But it does happen a lot more often than they want to admit. And on top of that, we know this for certain, that they have a staffing crisis, and we know that still leaning on some of the COVID rules, they're not accepting the bookings that they once did. Certainly not the level of bookings that they took pre-COVID. The arrests are still happening because there's so many criminals, but they're not able to actually get these people put in jail. And even if they are, they're there for like 2 or 3 days at the most. They get in front of a judge who goes easy on them, releases them, and they go back into the community, whether it's Tukwila or Renton or Auburn or Seattle, and they continue to act out with the same types of criminal behavior. So I don't know what will come of this. I know that you constantly get, and Dow Constantine's office did this as well, or excuse me, Inslee's office in this case did this as well, basically points, oh, we're seeing this happen all across the country, and it's extraordinarily complex, the reason why it's happening. He writes in a statement, according to Inslee's office, policymakers and the public should not jump to conclusions or expect easy answers. That's absurd. That's absolutely absurd. We know exactly why this is happening, and we know exactly how to stop it. They can pretend all they want, and the reason why they're gaslighting you and pretending that this is very difficult to figure out is because they know the Democrats are responsible. They know they are responsible. There's some aspects that they don't hold total responsibility for. Okay, fine, I'll grant you that. But they hold the bulk of the responsibility for this. They passed bills that made policing impossible. They put in place judges and prosecutors who don't enforce the law, who don't care about the law. And on top of that, they have enabled all of the nasty rhetoric coming from the BLM movement and the other anti-police voices here. It is disturbing and despicable. And so kudos yet again to these mayors for stepping up and calling attention to it. Now, is there some politicking going on here? Maybe. Maybe this is in part to help Jim Farrell. But in this case, their politics are correct. And I hope that Jim Farrell does, in fact, gain politically from this, because they're right. And the folks who are running for King County prosecutor, Lisa Mannion, is insane. If you want a worse version of what we already have, you vote for Lisa Mannion. If you want at least some semblance of hope, you go with Jim Farrell. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text message. 1-800-465-8770. Listening to the Jason Rand Show. Welcome back to the Jason Rand Show. We are here in Dallas for CPAC. Congressman Ralph Norman of South Carolina joining me at the booth. We've talked many times. This is the first time we've actually met. Nice to actually meet you.
Well, great to meet you, Jason. Appreciate what you do.
I want to talk about something that you've highlighted a lot lately, the fentanyl crisis in this country, in large part due, though not exclusively, but in large part due to the border. It's coming also in from the northern border via China, via Vancouver. Mm-hmm. What is being done from a national perspective other than the right highlighting it? Because it's really a problem that the left has caused.
Yeah, Jason, it's a sad state, sad commentary for our country for this administration to open the borders to kill, it's up to 300 young people per day.
Yep.
And as you say, it's coming from China, through Mexico, through Vancouver. The blood is on this administration's hands, and why they are continuing to ignore it is baffling. It's the mistakes that are being made. This is one of the gravest, because you're involving lives. You're involving putting the police. I mean, look at how the police are at risk. Every time they stop a car, it's going to be 15 million illegals by the time this administration continues to leave open the borders. And it's got such a simple fix. You finish building the wall, and he just won't do it. It's intentional. It's like every other mistake he's doing. It's his end is to, in my opinion, to completely subvert the United States as a world power and turn it over to basically socialism.
So what? So that's specific for the border, you're saying, or that's just the end goal? Because I'm trying to figure out, why is he ignoring the situation at the border? What is the end goal, or at least how does that lead to what you're pointing out, which is ultimately subverting capitalism?
Subverting capitalism. He looks on it as power. He looks on it as votes for him. I mean, why else would you allow, you know, over 167 different countries to come in unfettered? We're a sovereign country. We've got sovereign borders. We did. And the only thing you can ask is, why would you do this? Why would you burden the municipalities with basically a group of illegals who can't speak the language, that have no noticeable skills? A lot of them are emptying their jails to come to America. And it's intentional. And, you know, the only thing you can say is it's to retain power and to put them on the government payroll. And what a sad commentary.
It is. And, you know, if we didn't have even just a recent example of New York trying to allow in certain circumstances illegal immigrants to vote, you know, I think it's easy to push back and say, oh, this is just a conspiracy theory. They're just trying to be the good soul of the world to bring people in who need help. But it seems pretty obvious that they are, in fact, trying to change the laws so that folks who are in this country legally can, in fact, vote.
This country has never experienced this type of invasion. And that's what it is, a violation of the Constitution. It's invasion. I'm, you know, you're going to see more and more states trying to stop it through their AGs, the file suit. And the sad part is the ones, you know, we had last month 205,000 apprehended. That's not counting the ones that got away.
Yeah.
When I was at the border, not only were they transporting them all over the country, giving them cell phones. When they got boarded on the plane from McAllen, Texas, where we flew out of, no ID, no other than a cardboard box at the front saying, "We can't speak the language. Help us, you know, find the way." And so, you know, how do we walk this back? That's going to be our challenge. Once they're free,
I mean, realistically, can you walk this back? We're not going to do mass deportations. That's just not going to happen. Nor is that a good look, frankly. Just the optics of that is just not positive. You can stop it at the border, but you can't walk this back.
Once they're in the country, it's going to be tough. But where it will show itself is as the municipalities have the classrooms crowded with illegals, as the hospitals have the emergency rooms crowded with illegals, non-paying, by the way. It'll be tough, but the criminals will soon show themselves. And you have strong law enforcement, you have consequences for those that are to break the law. And it's so unfair. It's so unfair to the American people. If, you know, we are heading toward insolvency, $30 trillion in debt, I would make the argument we've got a problem. And to add to it by putting these on the payroll, not to mention the cost that's already been expended to house them, to fly them all over the country, to, you know, supposedly give them medical care at the border. It's the train has come off the wheels of this administration.
Do you think, though, that a large portion are coming into this country are criminal? Because I don't know if the data bears that. Certainly, there are some people who are coming into this country illegally who are, in fact, criminal. The majority of the people, and this is why I think it's so complicated for some people, just at least emotionally, to talk about, is that they want a better life. And I understand that. I don't think there's the right way to do it. But they're not criminal. Some of them are, but they're not overall criminal.
But the sad part, Jason, you know, we look at what happened as an example at 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
The criminals have got to be right one time to cause the death of Americans. The police departments, the local authorities have to be right 100% of the time to prevent the deaths. How many Kate Stileys are we going to have who are gunned down with her father? How many of these are we going to have?
Yeah.
And it's like cancer. You know, how much of it is acceptable? You want to cure it. And it's just opening the doors to problems that this country has never seen before.
Ultimately, we're headed towards the midterm. How much of this is going to play a role in how people vote? Because there are a lot of things that you can point to that say this is why Republicans should, in theory, do well.
When you look at the election of Donald Trump, his main centerpiece of his campaign was immigration. Now, there's been so many other things that we're going to have to address, immigration being one of them, protecting our Second Amendment rights, inflation, dependence on foreign countries that don't like us. I mean, you can start down the line. The only thing this administration has done right is now replaced Jimmy Carter as the worst president. I mean, that's the only thing you can point to.
It's quite a dubious honor.
It's a dubious honor. And why would everywhere I go, why is he doing this? It's self-inflicted. Energy, natural gas being the leader.
Yeah.
I know in my industry, trucks and trains bring the majority of the product to build a home or build a shopping center. I hadn't seen too many trucks operating on solar panels and turbines.
Yeah.
And so,
maybe someday.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, at the end of the day, don't we just want better technology for this? And we're not going to stand in the way of better technology that gets us there. It's just that we're just not there yet. You can't just completely dismantle an industry and an economy to get to a place that we're not ready for.
Get this. I was touring a plant, manufactured parts for the military in Sumter, South Carolina. And one of the engineers came up and said, you know, the scary part about this administration putting the brakes on anything to do with natural gas, oil, the regulations are in place, the dependence on other countries by canceling leases and whatnot. He said, you know, it scares me to think about getting on a plane operated by batteries.
Yeah.
The same thing with all the other forms of transportation. So this quick in 19 months, I mean, yeah. I mean, think about it. 19 months, we've gone from a booming economy, you know, 1.5% inflation rate, highest home ownership. I mean, the list goes on and on, to basically recession, 2/4 of GDP growth, which is negative. It's a recession, Mr. Biden.
No, it's a transition, I'm told.
Yeah, transition to socialism.
No kidding. Congressman Ralph Norman, South Carolina, thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate
it. Thank you, Jason. Appreciate it.
Now this. Joining me at the booth here at CPAC, Jeff Berment. He's the CEO and the founder of Tusk, which bills itself as a conservative browser. What in God's name does that mean? Let's find out. What does that mean?
Well, let me put it this way. We're not woke. Mm-hmm. We've woken up from the woke. So the story behind this is I've been in tech for 10 or 12 years. I'm one of the few conservatives out there that, you know, knows how to build tech. And I realized in the last few years that we're going so far to the left, search, browsers, and so your freedom is being taken away.
But how does the browser do it? So I get the search part, right? Yeah. So you go through Google, they can manipulate what you see. But what does the browser have to do with it?
So the browser is your gateway into that search. So this is just the first step. The first step is giving you a browser that will show you conservative news. Give you conservative news. You don't have to go try and find it, and give you a news feed that's conservative. That's the first step. The second step is, which we hope to build in the next year, is truly a search engine that's geared for conservatives.
And as far as, you can learn more, by the way, tuskbrowser.com. It doesn't take our information. It doesn't hold our search history, none of that.
I believe in privacy. I don't believe in taking people. If we need money, we make money off of advertising, but I don't take your information. I don't even have your email addresses. I don't believe in taking your email address.
None of it. So how do you make money?
We make money from ads, yeah. And you know, there is an issue about the IP addresses.
Mm-hmm.
But it's so prevalent, there's really nothing you can do about it.
Yeah, I mean,
that.
At some point, it's also on the consumer, right? I mean, if you're truly that concerned about the IP, you can do a VPN, I guess.
Exactly.
But is there a market for that extent?
Well, first of all, it's expensive. So you're going to be spending $100, $140 a year on your on your VPN. And second of all, I feel it's pretty unnecessary. Most of the stuff that, and if you're coming through us, of course, if you're not a conservative, I respect your privacy.
Yeah.
We are never going to interfere with that.
Yeah, you're not asking someone what their ideological position is before they download.
No, absolutely not.
So how do you ensure that this actually gets out there and isn't just completely crushed by big tech?
Well, it's hard for big tech to crush so long as they leave you in the stores, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we could do it without the stores if we had to, but obviously...
That helps.
Yeah, obviously in the store, in the app stores is helpful. And they don't tend to, you know, I mean, I understand what they did with Parler, but we don't trade conversations. We just give you the news. We give you conservative news.
It's the infrastructure to get it, right? I mean, you're not creating it and no one is producing it
exactly.
On your browser.
Exactly.
I always, whenever I think of someone who wants to keep all of their internet traffic private, I immediately go to, what are you doing?
Yeah, what are you up to?
Is that a concern?
It's always a concern.
Right? Because I imagine not everyone's going to, obviously most people don't do it for nefarious purposes. But could it be used for nefarious purposes?
It can be. I mean, and we don't have if somebody came to us and said, who are these people?
We couldn't tell them.
Yeah, we couldn't tell them because we don't know. We don't take as I said, I don't have an email address.
Mm-hmm.
We had a browser originally that had an email address, and the only way you could even get to that person was by brute force. You had to actually open up, you know, if he had a password 123, okay, you could get in there. But otherwise, if you put a decent password.
Yeah, don't do that.
Yeah, don't do password
123. So where does it stand right now, Tusk?
So Tusk is launched. You can get it on iOS. You can get it on Android. You get a desktop. I love desktop. It's big. It's bold. All the pictures, by the way, are all American pictures. I don't have anything from a foreign country. This is an American browser built for Americans, for conservatives.
How's it going?
It's going great. And I'm shocked here how many people at CPAC are learning about it and saying, oh, you guys are the guys that are building the freedom of speech browser.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly my point is, I didn't need to do this. I spent my own money to build it, and I am like, we've got to solve this. Yeah. We cannot let censorship beat us up.
I'm going to check it out. I'm very particular, so hopefully it works and looks the way that I like. But I'll definitely check it out when I'm doing, especially when I'm doing research on stuff where I know if someone looks into it, they will take it out of context and say, "What in God's name is
now,
he doing?"
Now, just remember, we haven't built search yet.
We haven't done the search engine.
So
yet.
The search engine's the next really big thing. That's a lot of money. We need to gather some investors to build that. But once we build that, there's real freedom of speech again. Not what we're getting today, and that's what I'm after.
TusBrowser.com. Go there right now. We've been talking with Jeff Berment. He's the CEO and founder. Thank you so much for stopping by. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
You're listening to The Jason Rant Show.